Okay. What? Give me 1 second. I need to record. Okay.
I'd like to open this morning with a quote from St. Augustine, and it is this: "O Lord, thou didst strike my heart with your word, and I did love thee." I believe that that's what Melissa and I have prayed for all of you this past year. Last semester, as we studied the Song of Solomon in the Old Testament, and this semester, as we studied the Gospels, because she and I both have experienced and believe very deeply that God gave his word, gave it through all the centuries for the same reason, so that by the eyes of the Holy Spirit, human beings could truly see him through his word and would grow to love him with our hearts passionately as he has loved us. It's my privilege today to pick out some of the glimpses that God gave to both Melissa and to me this year of his incomparably beautiful personality so as to make us hunger and thirst for more. So I'd like to open with a prayer by Joy Dawson, who is a teacher of many years and great depth. She's from New Zealand. "We would be still and know that you are God. We stand in awe of you, your awesome holiness, majestic splendor, blazing glory, limitless power, and unquestionable sovereignty. We worship you for your flawless character, your infinite knowledge and wisdom, your absolute justice, your unswerving faithfulness, unending mercy. We bow our hearts and bend our knees before your dazzling beauty, your fascinating personality, your incomprehensible humility, your unsearchable understanding, and your unfathomable love. Our greatest need is to have a far greater revelation of what you are really like." So this morning, the way I'm going to do it is to start with a review of the gospel, even though that's what we just most recently studied. But then I'm going to go back to the Song of Songs from the first semester. And my reasoning is this: the last lesson that we had from Melissa was about Jesus telling the disciples that when the Holy Spirit came and filled them, they, each one of them, would be able to now live in an eternal, intimate love relationship with him, each one fully, 24/7. And he commissioned them to go share the good news about his being God with others, which is exactly what they did. And that's what is true in the Song of Solomon, that the girl, the maiden who represents the soul of each believer, comes to know the Lord and deepens in her intimate friendship with him. And the end of the story is again a sending out, after her, let's say, her discipleship, she goes out with him as an apostle, as a sent one, to tell others that they too can have that kind of relationship. And so I want to establish it through our review of Melissa's stories and then go back and show you how it is the echo of something very, very much earlier in the Old Testament, the center of the Old Testament. And it's, I don't know if I'll say this later as well, but it's, to me, it's like a symphony where a motif is introduced in an early part of the symphony. The melody is there from the beginning, and then it just is embellished and takes on many journeys and ends with a great crescendo, which is kind of like what the Bible does. Mm-hmm. So In the Gospel of Jesus, which is the book that Melissa has written, she has used all the Gospels, primarily the Gospel of John, but also the Synoptic Gospels, all the others, Mark, Luke, and Matthew. And she has woven the narratives together. And in each one of these teachings, she has put them into a wonderful pattern. I think it's a brilliant idea, and it falls into these categories. First, she looks at the history, the who, what, when, and where of the actual gospel story. Then she goes into a segment of what she calls the mystery. Mystery in the Bible doesn't mean what is unknowable, but it's just what is not yet revealed. And so the mystery part is the revelation of how Jesus is fulfilling all that has been pointed to before, and that's so rich. Then the third segment, major segment, is me, history, mystery, and me. Me being, how does this apply in my own life? And finally, then, in the word of the week, a particular kind of word, a Latin word or a Greek word or something that sums up or reveal something that we might not have known about the story, but that the whole story can hinge on. I think this is a perfect way for all Bible study to go, the story itself, and then how the story can be unfolded, and then how it applies to us. You may remember, if you studied with me back in the first semester or any earlier study, because I've used it for a long time, I put Bible study of any kind into three questions. The first question being, what does this show me about God's heart? Secondly, what does it show me about God's heart toward me personally? Yes, he's merciful. How do I experience his mercy personally? And then, and only then, do we move kind of into the area of performance. And in fact, it's not even performance. It's how then, experiencing as I am the mercy of God, let's say, how does God want that to flow out to others? And in the particulars of my life, where is he pointing me to grow in that area? So the history, mystery, and me, and the questions, what does this show me about God toward me, and about God through me, I think are very similar, and I hope you find that helpful. So, Jesus's person, his acts, his miracles, even though these are historical stories from the first century, apply to all of us in every age. Somehow the word is timely and timeless, and eternal in its application, and universal in its application, even though each one of us is having a unique experience and adventure with him. So, here's an example. This is the first story that we studied this last semester, and Melissa has named it An Invitation to Faith. It's taken from the sixth chapter of John, and it's just immediately following the feeding of the 5,000, we're told that after this massive miracle had happened, and the disciples have participated in it, and they're probably still unable to believe that it has actually happened. They're probably still pinching themselves. After this, Jesus himself withdrew into the hills. He probably was going to pray and be with the Father, and besides that, the people were coming after him from the get-go to make him king so that they can have all the bread they wanted. The disciples themselves left and went across the Sea of Galilee to Capernaum. And at that time, a great storm brews. It's at night, and it's a terrifying storm, even though they are fishermen. And Jesus tops the miracle that he did with the feeding of the 5,000. And they see him walking across the water toward them, and they are terrified. In my version, the Revised Standard Version, which I've used for a long time, Jesus simply says to them, it's I, don't be afraid. Melissa points out that in fact, Jesus says something much more significant than that. He says, I am, which if you know anything about the Old Testament, you know that that's the essential name of God, the tetragrammaton, the unpronounceably sacred and holy name of God, but it means I am that I am, which is what he first revealed to Moses, and Jesus is appropriating that for himself because he's moving, he's beginning to move in these miracles and teachings into the revelation that he has been sent to bring, and that is that he is God in the flesh. So